number 14.
We started it last week. The question that we're going to be answering today is, what is a gospel meeting? And again, just to for those who may not have been here for the entirety of these questions, they're basically questions that we as Christians may be asked concerning our practices, concerning our teaching, things that individuals in the world may see and say, why do you do that? Or what is that that you're doing? And one of the things that that you commonly see in churches of Christ are these efforts that go on for a week's duration or something similar to that, that is referred to as a gospel meeting, which is a different designation than you commonly hear among the denominations, because the denominations commonly use the term revival to refer to those types of protracted meetings. And we spent some time in our discussion last week just to look at the basically the outline of the article that we discussed, where we talked about what, again, gospel meetings are, a week's period, coming together each night for the purpose of preaching and singing and worship to God. And again, you'll notice point number two, we call them gospel meetings to differentiate from the denominational practices that are often found in revivals. We wanted to emphasize that the term itself is not an inappropriate term, the term revival. It is an effort that we have to encourage, perhaps to revive the flagging zeal that may be present among some, to edify, to strengthen. So the idea or concept of a revival in and of itself is not inappropriate. It's a scriptural concept, and so the term would be acceptable. There are many who would object to the use of the term, and we'll kind of get into this more when we get into the discussion questions. It is one of the questions, simply because of the denominational practices. You know, if the denominations are having revivals, and a part of their revivals include the use of instrumental music, various types of entertainment, you know, a lot of the craziness that goes on for which there is no biblical authority, we certainly don't want individuals to read a circular or an invitation or to hear from someone, why don't you come to our revival, and them to get that idea that we're doing those kinds of things. And so most commonly we use a different term. There are other terms that are used as well, though. You've heard the term lectureship that is used. I don't really like it. I think I'd rather have revival than lectureship. I think that the term lectureship is kind of to designate that there are multiple speakers rather than a single man speaking. I don't know why such a differentiation is made, but to be honest, if a man is going to be speaking to me concerning religious matters, I want him preaching, not lecturing. And I think that there's a difference. So I have a little bit of a problem with the concept of the term lectureship as it's used these days. But that's just kind of a personal little problem that I have with it, not anything that would indicate it's inappropriate. But having said that, that's the points that we have, or these are the points that we have established in our discussion so far. And what we really want to do as we talk about this and look at the various questions is to point out the fact that there are certain things that can be accomplished in these meetings. There are certain limitations as to what we can do in these meetings. We want to make sure that everyone is on board with all of those things so that we can make sure that what we're doing is in spirit and in truth, in accord with what God's will is for us as we do His work. And so that's what most of the questions, at least, are designed to do. So let's start off with asking the first question. Why is the phrase gospel meeting appropriate? What is right about it? And we can ask, are there any drawbacks that that may come from using that particular phrase? So let's start off with regard to the benefits. Is it appropriate? We've determined that already. So what are the benefits of, or what are we talking about when we talk about a gospel meeting? What's being described here? The benefits of it. Yes, Jerry. Okay. So in using that term, then we are signifying the nature of the speeches, the sermons. They're what they're going to be, and they are definitely should be at least centered in a proclamation of the good news of Jesus Christ. That's the purpose of those meetings. Okay? Any potential drawbacks? Can you think of? Using the term? Yes, Kyle?
Right,
Well, that's true. That's an unfortunate thing. I don't know that we could consider that a drawback from our point of view, however. It's simply a reality that there are a lot of people that aren't interested in spiritual things. One point that I would make is there are some individuals who, some churches that, and their practices that have sought to, in some way, repackage it so that it won't be perceived as being that. In the hopes that people will come and then be pleasantly surprised by what it in actuality is. I just want to indicate my discomfort with that kind of a practice that in any way we would be perceived as in any way misleading with regard to what we're putting out to the community and then we make invitations. I think honesty and being above board about all things is important. There have been times when you have been misrepresented. Or have had misrepresented to you a particular circumstance or scenario, and there's sometimes some resentment. You know, the bait and switch. It's always been considered a kind of an inappropriate sales tactic. Maybe pretty effective, but it's something that's irritating. I remember my dad. He liked to look at cars and shop for cars and such. Whenever he was looking for cars, he would look in the paper, and there would always be this great deal on a particular car, and you'd call them or you'd go by and that car's gone because there's only one of them, you know, but they've got 35 that are $5,000 more that they'll sell, you know, and it's kind of the basic type thing, and it's kind of irritating for that kind of misrepresentation or that kind of tactic to be used. And we need to make sure that we're above board with the way we present these particular meetings to the community. We want to share the gospel. We want to proclaim God's word. If you have an interest in that, we want you to come and to be above board with regard to our efforts. Now, what he indicated in his particular, of course, we have a material that's prepared by another, and his answer in this regard was simply with regard to the practice of gospel meetings in the past. As time has progressed, gospel meetings have led to fewer conversions during a week's study. And I think that some members have gotten to the point where they view a gospel meeting as kind of a members-only affair. I hope that we never get to that point where we feel like, okay, we're going to have a gospel meeting and no effort is made to invite individuals from the community to hear the gospel preached. When you have men coming, we're going to have a gospel meeting upcoming just next month. We're basically less than a month away now. Brother Brad Hoagland is going to preach a series of lessons. And I wish Josh was in here because he's heard this lesson a number of times. I think that it's the final night of the meeting. Brett commonly preaches a lesson called Live Like You're Dying, or something similar to that. But it's really an amazing lesson that everybody needs to hear. Doesn't matter if you're a member of the church or whether you're someone who's in the community. It's a sobering message that is extremely powerful. I'm looking forward to it. I've only heard about it. I've not actually heard it preached. That would be a wonderful thing for individuals in the community to hear. And we need to be active in inviting individuals to come. We're going to be very, very soon having the cards that we're going to have printed up so that you can hand them out to your friends, co-workers, family, individuals that you think might have an interest. And you should encourage them. Some lessons will deal with issues concerning doctrinal issues or maybe things that will be helpful to the congregation. But almost always a preacher, as he holds a meeting, will have several lessons that will be very beneficial to those in the community. First principle lessons that are designed specifically to elicit the response to the gospel. And to have individuals there gives a different dynamic to the meeting than if it's just the members. And so we need to be active in inviting and seeking to convert souls through this effort. That's one of the purposes of it. So that's something to keep in mind. I know that it doesn't happen as often as it used to. It's hard to get people out from in front of their televisions or from the recreational activities during the week, or school, or whatever the conflict in the evenings might be. But that doesn't mean that there are not honest souls and good hearts out there who are interested in truth. And it also does not mean that if this time you ask them, whereas you've asked them time and time again and they haven't come, that this might not be the time that they actually will say, yeah, I'll come this time and listen to what is being preached. Yes, sir?
I know a righteous claim, and I'll have to deny common knowledge, but do come up very church. But I always looked at gospel as a way to listen to another person's opinion. I stopped to think about Mark Jackson in this last meeting here. And his comment about being a man, I never considered the fact of piano organ being a man-made way to worship God. I never looked at it that way. All the other proposed. And I think that's good for us to see these types of things going on also.
Mark Smith is his name, not Jackson. Yeah, Mark Smith. That's very good. In other words, you don't have to listen to me for a week. You have to listen to someone else. And sometimes good comes from that. And that's something that is right and proper. I mean, as we go through these particular questions, what's going to be obvious is that there is a twofold purpose with regard to the messages that are proclaimed. It's the edification of the saints, the evangelism of lost souls. And even if only one is accomplished, we don't have a single visitor that comes to our gospel meeting, whether it be from other churches or whether it be individuals from the community who aren't Christians, whatever the case may be. Still, it's going to be a spiritual feast for those of us who do come. So it's always a success if the gospel is preached and people are encouraged as a result of it, and worth the time and effort that we put into such a gospel meeting. So that's a good thing. Lewis?
I've got a comment.
Okay, Chris is first. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Unclear, at least from something not coming from this background, that you weren't trying to sell the lecture or pay something to attend or have to pay member to attend. The flyer show rather a little bit confusing.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen some announcements and such where there's it's specified, for example, at the bottom that no collections will be taken, and such. What I hope that we do though, as individuals, as we're offering those things up, is we use those as an opportunity for conversation. In other words, it gives you hand it to them and you explain to them what this is and what we want and why we would like you to come and those kinds of things, and it allows for a conversation and a discourse. Let me tell you something. If you take these cards out as an example, or the flyers or whatever that we print up, and you just stick them in a door and walk away, it's not going to be effective. But if you have individuals that you know and you hand it to us, because it's basically a way of saying, here's the time, this is what's happening, and you talk to them about it, then there can be that explanation.
And that's
very
anxious over the time.
Yeah. Right.
Free teaching on the Bible.
Sure. I'll take that into consideration. Maybe reword it a little bit and make it a little bit more clear this time than it has been in the past. Hadn't thought about that. Yeah. Good. Lewis?
Back to your comment earlier about maybe fewer conversions now in gospel meetings than there have been in the past. I think that's the reflection of our society in general and our ability to reach people. But the one thing we need to keep in mind is what Paul told the Galatians in Galatians 6:9, let us not grow weary in well-doing, because it's going to pay off in the end.
Yeah, good.
And so we shouldn't be trying to predict the outcome. We just need to get out and extend the invitation. And the outcome, we have no control over.
Yeah.
But we can control our invitation.
Very good. I appreciate that. Yeah. And by the way, it's not a matter of the age in which you live. You were correct in saying it's a matter of the society, because there are places that you can go to in other parts of the world where people are so eager to hear the gospel. It's just absolutely amazing. I've used the illustration a number of times of the church in Germany. There's a small church in Ramstein It's Kaiserslautern is the name of the town, but it's the Ramstein Air Force Base. And it's primarily made up of Americans who are stationed at the Air Force Base. And they're a very good congregation, very strong congregation. They've done an awful lot of missionary work. You wouldn't think of a church in Germany engaging missionary work. They've been very, very ineffective in making headway in Germany. They've not converted only one or two in the years and years they've been there from the actual German population. And if you know something about the secular German population, you'll understand why. He's either steeped in the, if it's religious, steeped in Lutheranism. If it's non-religious, they're very much a nihilistic and humanistic society. But what they have been able to do is do missionary work in Lithuania and convert a number of souls in Lithuania. And of course, India, Jamaica, the Philippines. There are a lot of areas of the world where the gospel is spreading rapidly. It's just that we're living in such a secular and ungodly society, there's not a lot of interest always. It doesn't give us the right, as you indicated, to slack off in our efforts. It's simply perhaps helpful so that we don't become discouraged when it doesn't always show itself as bearing fruit visibly or numerically with regard to those things. Anytime the seed's planted, if it doesn't germinate immediately, it doesn't change the fact that the seed was planted, and that's a good thing. Justin?
I said there's a bit of a feedback loop going on where there are societal changes and there are less people willing to come. As there are less people willing to come, then it's more typical for it to be members or Christians from other congregations. And as that happened, preachers started changing what they were preaching, because you used to have, or it was the first principle, or what was the term, come to Jesus.
Yeah, sermons. Sure.
Every night of the week.
Right.
And it's a couple nights now, maybe four if you're lucky.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And then people start viewing it like that, and so they're less likely to fight.
Okay, so do you have a suggestion of what we might do to stop that trend?
Well, you take control of the only part you have control over, and that's the topic of the sermons.
Okay. Because I'm guilty of doing what he just said. I mean, what I do when I go and hold a gospel meeting is I acknowledge the fact that my primary audience will be members of the church, because it is it is almost every gospel meeting I've ever held. That's the case. I've been in a couple of places where there were some circumstances where it wasn't the case, and I adapted for that purpose. But as a result of that, just for example, I've got a meeting scheduled in Temple at the end of this month, and I've got a lesson on the home. I've got a couple lessons on Sunday where I'm going to deal with issues that will be beneficial to the church. I've got two first principle lessons that are going to be during the weeknights. It's a short meeting, but during the weeknights. And so I've kind of limited the amount of first principle preaching I'm doing because of the primary audience being that. My only thing would be is if you have a week full of first principle meetings and you don't have individuals coming from the community, it's not a waste by any means. But at the same time, it may not be the best use of the time.
But you were talking about drawbacks of the term. That's the question. And
but we go all.
It's inaccurate. The term's inaccurate a lot of times. Just because you preach a really good lesson about Joseph. Awesome, but it's not necessarily a gospel lesson. And so sometimes I've heard people say, oh, I know the gospel. No, I'm going to come to some of the things, but I'm not going to come to all of it. It's like, well, we're not even really having gospel meetings anymore. We're really having just edification weeks for the congregants.
Yeah, the term gospel meeting, if it's specifically referred to, it has an evangelical, or let's put it this way, it used to and it still should have an evangelical flavor or connotation to it. And sometimes the meetings themselves are more for the purpose of edification than evangelism. Yes?
You know, I was raised on the Mount of Baptist. Going on with what he's saying, you never hear about hell anymore. It used to be that there, almost every other meeting you had in church or whatever, they preached on heaven, they preached on hell. Mm-hmm. Hell was just as sure as heaven.
Certainly.
And, you know, nobody hears about hell anymore. I know why, because it's an unpleasant subject, I think, that you don't teach. But maybe we need to hear about hell a little bit every once in a while.
Amen. Amen. That means I got to get my lesson up. Get that done for too long, then, too. And it's barely been too long since I preached on it. Yeah. And you're right. You're right. The fire and brimstone lessons of the past are not always heard these days. And it's something that a lot of people don't like to hear. Certainly. But it's definitely needed. That's part of declaring the whole counsel of God. Good comments. Appreciate it. Anybody else? All right. Let us go on then to the second question, and that is the term revival. Let's not spend a lot of time on this because we've already discussed it. Is it appropriate? We've talked about it's scriptural, the fact that it's a scriptural concept, so there's no objection as to the use of the term. Is it appropriate? And I think that's going to be somewhat a matter of judgment, that some would have objections that others might not have. We've talked about how it may not be expedient simply because of the connotations and the denominational practices. We want to differentiate or distinguish so that there's no misunderstandings as to what it is that we're actually doing. But that can be accomplished by explaining it as well. Like I said, I and Chris brought this up, and how you hand someone something, let's say one of our circulars to the gospel meeting, you hand it to them, and if they don't have any background, they have no idea what it is they're looking at. They have times, and there's a man there that they have absolutely no idea who he is. And that's about all. So what's going to happen? What are you going to do? What's the agenda? And if you're doing that to someone who has absolutely no background, and you're just handing it to them and saying, "Why don't you come?" and then walking off, I think you're doing a little bit of a disservice to them, and you're probably not going to be very effective. But if you take the time to explain to them what the intent of the meeting is, then that would be very helpful. But as far as the benefits and drawbacks. Of course, again, the drawback would be, again, if someone might misconstrue as to what it is, what the event is, because of the preconception that they have in their own minds. Okay? So, again, we pretty much discussed that, so I just wanted to very quickly.
When you look at what the media has done, you might make people look at, the movies you see about the temple, overlords and all
this going on. Yes. That's Billy Graham, over the years, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And tell him, the Blues Brothers, I think. You wanted to say something.
Yeah, wasn't that.
Yeah, I know. That's why I went ahead and called on you.
No, the revival term is kind of like an admission of guilt, just right off the bat. It's like, okay, do I need revival? Well, maybe some people don't like to think about it that way. Anyway, I don't really. I don't intend to be revived. I intend to just learn more and be stronger. But revival kind of implies that now you're about to just fall off.
We got a lukewarm church, and we need to
roll it up again to get you going. And I don't really look at it that way.
I suppose it could be taken that way. I've always thought that the intention or purpose would be basically what Dennis read from 2 Peter 1. To stir you up by way of reminder. That's something we all need continually. As a stirring up by way of reminder, not an indication necessarily that we're lacking in zeal, but that we need to be, we need to continually be encouraged and such. But I get your point. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, obviously, as an evangelical, like just like gospel meaning, as an evangelical meaning to revival is not so much the revival of our church as much as the revival of other people. It's the evangelical revival of the people who counts actually revive. But even so, I think it is, in a way, it's a better term, the gospel meaning, in the sense that people do understand what it means. Obviously, it does have a different connotation of what they know revival is. But to me, I see a lot of people that are confused with, so the gospel meeting, am I invited to that? And just tell me if we're having one, because if I say, hey, we're having a work meeting, are you going to come to my job and come to our work meeting?
Right, right.
No, yeah. But if I say we're having a career day at our work, you might go, oh, okay, I'm invited to that because it's something for everybody to talk about careers or anything like that.
Yeah.
So gospel meaning to me is got a drawback to the word meeting because it doesn't really seem as much of something that other people are invited to as much as it is it's something partial.
That's legitimate. Like I said, what we're talking about here, at least what we're going to get to eventually, we haven't got there yet. We'll get to is actually what it is. When we have this this effort in a month's time, what it is that we're going to be doing, what should we be doing, what we should be striving to do. And you know, what we're having is our descriptions. We could say we're having a week full of sermons, and we're having an effort to preach the gospel to the community. You know, it's just a term that's thrown up there, and it's obviously a traditional term. It's one that's been used ever since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. I mean, I don't remember any other term ever being used other than they came up with the lectureships when we started having multiple speakers. So I don't know, you know, it's certainly not something we have to be wed to by any means, but you can describe it any way you want to. But the main thing is to educate the people. In other words, when you're inviting someone to come, please tell them what it is that you're inviting them to come to. And you might find that they're a little bit more likely to come if you do. Justin? Oh, wasn't Justin, it was Dennis? Who was it that raised your hand over here? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I thought there was somebody back there. I didn't see you, but okay.
Julian, what he said. I can send that card to any Christian person I know. I don't know exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
But I cannot tell you how many people over the years have said, what is that? What does that mean? And while if I'm talking to them, I have the opportunity to educate them. Sometimes but all I can do at that point is send things out. And there's not much I can write on it. So
right.
It's a term that we use like you are at a job and you have your own little words that you use. And the new guy comes in and goes, yeah, I don't know what that means.
So I definitely need to be sure when we put the ad in the paper to maybe be a little bit more careful what I have been in the past, because there'll be a lot of people reading that will read it and we'll just go right on because we don't know what it is. See, I'm learning something from this.
I wouldn't even use the term gospel in that paper thing.
Well, I'll let you write it.
Another problem. That's just an abject. Another problem that we're meeting is that I've had a lot of people I talk to that expect it to not be a lectureship. Because like he was talking about work meetings. If I invite someone to a meeting, they don't
Bible
expect
study
for me to talk at them for an hour. They expect for a conversation to be had.
Good point. Yes. I didn't realize there'd be so much objection to the idea of a gospel meeting. Part of the name.
With the revival thing, that's confusing too.
I
mean, I was invited to a revival when I was 17, and somebody came up to me and said, we're having a revival over at such and such a church. And I said, well, who or what died? And I didn't know what they meant.
Well, you know, and that's something that's important for us again to point out, that when individuals are not religious, they don't have any background, any type of invitation extended to any kind of gathering that we have, you're going to do well to explain to them what you're talking about. Travis?
This is slightly tangential, but I can't miss the opportunity to build on what you mentioned about sort of inside lingo.
Mm-hmm.
And you obviously you know I said it at work. But I've been noticing for a long time that I think in any organization, it definitely happens. And broader than just the term gospel, meaning there's a lot of terms that we've used
as
a group that we're so comfortable with because we've been using them all our lives. And when people come in from the outside, I feel like sometimes we probably leave them behind because we're so comfortable using that jargon that we all know what it means and we've all studied for years and years. But it doesn't necessarily communicate or translate to them.
Yeah. That's a very valid point, and one that, since we are going off on a tangent a little bit, I'll just add to. Sometimes you may be. What I would encourage you as members, let's say in a Bible class, to be aware of is there will be times, and I do this. I try to do this, and I don't always do a good job of it. But I always try whenever a Bible class starts and we have visitors. If I'm not aware of who the visitor is, I'm not familiar with them or whatever, then I'll take extra time to introduce the concept of what we're talking about. I'll talk about it in more basic terms and spend more time in discussion. And the interesting thing about it, when I do that, I sometimes see some of the members like, you know, like we know this. You know, why are you doing this or whatever? Or questions asked that basically blow me out of the water because they go right to the heart of something that's technical that we're, you know, a lot of us will be familiar with, but the people who are visiting are not, and then I have to kind of answer that, but then get back and not leave people behind. And it's something that all of us would do well to be aware of. One of the areas where this comes in is when we're discussing authority. We have a lingo, as Travis indicated, that we utilize to establish or to systemize how we establish authority for our practices. And you've heard of command, example, and inference. It's interesting that shorthand has begun to be used by individuals who will ridicule the concept. They call it the CENI, C-E-N-I, command, example, necessary inference, the CENI way of looking at things. And it's actually, I've noticed a number of times in some forums on Facebook to where people in very caustic terms refer to the CENI way of interpreting the Bible. So whenever those situations arise, I mean, one of the first and most important things that I do when I talk to someone who's not a Christian and we have differences that we're discussing, we have to go back and say, you know, start off with, is it authorized? How do we determine whether God is accepting of this or not? How do we establish these things and walk through it? Well, when I do that, I don't use the lingo. I don't use the shorthand that we use to describe it. I may introduce a term and then explain the term and make sure they understand exactly what I'm talking about. But we always, again, do a disservice to individuals if we leave them behind in that way, and it happens more often than what you might think. So you say, how do you establish authority? Through command, example, and inference. What does that mean? You know, to someone who hasn't been taught. Now, those of you who have heard this time and time and time again, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But there may be some here tonight that are a little bit, well, what is he talking about? And it's not unfortunately, our purpose tonight to discuss that. But that's an example of, and by the way, if anybody wants to know, just to ask me afterwards, and we'll take as much time as you want to talk about it. But it is a dangerous thing to get so caught up in your way of talking that you leave people out in the cold in this regard, where they don't understand what it is. It's confusing to them because the principles aren't confusing. If you take the time to explain them and illustrate them and to teach on the subject, you can make it clear, and it's rather easy to understand and to apply. And we do people a disservice if we don't. I worry about that when you start talking about lessons on authority in a gospel meeting and you don't go to the basics. You go to the shorthand immediately. That there are a lot of people that will be leaving when the night's over and have absolutely nothing, no idea what you talked about. It was an important lesson. The principles were sound. It's something they needed to hear, but they didn't get it because the time wasn't taken to establish it in detail as to what, you know, how simple it is and to approach it perhaps without that added baggage of the shorthand. Tell you where the shorthand came from. Debates. Shorthand came from the debates. You have preachers that have to make arguments to defend the truth. They've got to distill it. They've got to be specific. They've got to be very careful with regard to the terminology they use so that they won't be attacked or misunderstood. And it's a way of, basically in a systematic way, establishing what the Bible teaches or to show how the Bible teaches. And we've taken that from the debates. And we've included that in evangelism, and that's somewhat, you know, that's somewhat, I think, missing the boat a little bit to do it that way, to use the shorthand to people who don't know what the shorthand means. I mean, you think about that. If you have someone who's a stenographer and they do their shorthand, and you look at their handwriting, you have no idea what it's saying. They do, but you don't, because you don't know the shorthand. If you learn the shorthand, then you would, and we need to be able to explain it. Just.
Since we're talking about practicalities, I just mentioned that it's good to know ahead of time what the topics are going to be as far as inviting people. Last time I sent out an email and things I handed out, all it said was, please come listen to Mark Smith. He's going to be talking about XYZ. And it's very clear, very easy to understand. If people had some knowledge of the Bible, they could figure out from the topics that it was talking about Bible stuff. But again, as you said, when I'm giving people these things, we talk about what it is. That's what I would say. Take this piece of paper, go around. So I'm talking about it with them some. There's no confusion about it. What is it? Oh, I'm coming to listen to a guy speak. All right, very clear what's happening here.
Okay, good. Yes, sir.
I don't know, from a different perspective, I think the box of chocolate
perspective of the gospel meeting is interesting because you can end up getting the toothpaste flavored piece of chocolate, but that's beside the point. It's always bad when talking to, might say, an outsider to use the shorthand, because not only do they already not understand the shorthand, they don't even understand half the words they use when they're talking to you, because they're using words with a denominational, whatever denomination it may be, but a denominational twist to it, like, what is faith? Well, we've been going over that. The whole reason we've been going over that is because the denominations have made it mean something else. So, speaking on their terms and getting them to understand their terms first, and then getting them to understand the real terms, that's a whole other thing.
Very good. Yeah, sometimes you have to unteach something before you can teach the truth. Rid them of misconceptions before the proper teaching can come in. Okay, so we went real quickly over that. Okay, yeah, next question. Okay, now let's get into a little bit of a discussion of a few of the passages. The responsibilities of the church, these are passages which indicate some of the things that a church is authorized to engage in. Some of the works that a church is to involve itself in. So looking at the verses, 1 Corinthians 11:26. Someone read that to me quickly. Yes, go ahead, Phil.
For so often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, claim the Lord's death till he comes.
Okay, and now let me go over there real quick, because that's not the correct verse.
Well,
I'm not saying that you read the wrong verse. I'm saying that the reference is not to the correct one, so I just want to make sure. Well, let me put it this way. Yes, it definitely is a responsibility, but what he was referring to, probably verse 8. Or verse 20. Verse 20 is the reference that would be the correct reference for what he was. See, I've got the answers. That's what I'm saying. I've got the answers. He was intending the idea of coming together for the purpose of worshiping. So when you come together in one place, it's not to eat the Lord's Supper, which would be that probably wouldn't be it either. Maybe intrinsic in the concept of verse 26 is the fact that we're eating together. But he was specifically talking about assembling for the purpose of worship. I don't know that's verse 26 indicates that. Now, the context, 1 Corinthians 11, certainly does, because the Corinthians were coming together. Now, they were distorting and abusing that principle, but they were coming together for the purpose, as an assembly, to worship God. That's something that is authorized. And that's what he was trying to get from that verse. So, and maybe not the best reference. He should have given maybe a group or a block of scriptures to point that out. So, one of the things that a church does, one of the things that we're authorized to do is come together for what we might refer to as corporate worship. That has reference to us joining our voices, joining ourselves together, communing around the Lord's table, worshiping God in song, praising Him, offering prayers, those kinds of things. It's something we do as a congregation or as a church. Okay. Second passage in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 12. Someone have that one? Go ahead, Phil. You're there.
For the equipping of the saints, the work of the ministry, with edifying the body of Christ.
Okay. So there we have reference to the offices that are found in the church is for the purpose of the edification of the saints. So edification is a work that is to be done. Ephesians 3:10. You're right there, Phil. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. To the intent that now the manifold wisdom of God might be made known by the church to the principalities and powers of
heavenly places. Yeah. So now we have the dissemination of God's wisdom to the world. So that would be evangelization. Evangelization is a work of the church, or purpose of the church, to make known God's wisdom to the world. And then the last in 1 Corinthians 16. Go ahead, Josh.
Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so you also are to do. on the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper, so that there will be no collecting when I come. And when I arrive, I will send those whom you accredit by letter to carry your gift to Jerusalem. If it seems advisable that I should go also, they will accompany me.
Okay. So the Church of Corinth is given instructions there in 1 Corinthians 16 to engage in a work, prepare themselves for that work of benevolence and sharing. So there's another thing that we are authorized as a congregation to do, is engage in benevolent work. So you've got worship, you've got evangelism, edification, and benevolence are things that the church is authorized to do. Yes, Dennis?
Here's a passage that puts us, I guess, when we can do all these things. Acts chapter 20, Paul's statement to the Ephesian elders. And he said, verse 20, Acts 20 and verse 20, he said, and I kept back nothing that was helpful but proclaiming to you and taught you publicly and from house to house. So you can teach both in public and you can teach in private. Verse 31, he says, therefore, watch and remember that for 3 years I did not cease to warn everyone, night and day, with tears. He was 24/7 anywhere you are.
You've
got example, all right?
Very good, very good. Okay, let us go to the next question, because this is kind of what we're going to... What are we seeking to accomplish with regard to these things that we're authorized to do as Christians in these meetings? What are those categories? We have four categories we brought up to...
Evangelism,
edification, what else? One more. Sorry?
Worship.
Okay, so we do all, we enter into worship on those occasions. The preaching itself... is for the purpose of evangelism and edification, but as we come together on those at those times, we also engage in various acts of worship, inclusive of singing and prayers. So it's a good thing to do, put it that way. Gospel meeting is a good thing to do, and it's something that it's a good time for us to be studying this particular subject, since we've got one coming up in a month. Don, do you have... All right, anybody else have any comments, questions? Second bell. Appreciate very much everyone's kind attention today. We'll pick up with the next question next time.